like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest on today's show is Don Barbone, founder of Somity Wildlife, a nonprofit organization in Ormond Beach that rehabilitates sick, injured, and orphaned wildlife native to Florida. Since launching the sanctuary in around 2020, Barbone has nursed countless animals back to health, always with the intention of releasing them back into their natural habitats. Somity is licensed through the state, so Barbone receives calls and animals in need of care directly from the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, or FWC. This also means the animals that arrive at Somity for Barbone's healing touch can range from raccoons, rabbits, and possum to deer, coyote, and bobcats. An additional important facet of Somity's mission involves cultivating wildlife awareness, sometimes assisted by their resident ambassadors, including Judge a raccoon in a wheelchair. Today's show will likely include instructions on what to do and what not to do when you find a wild animal who appears to be injured or ill. So there will be many things to discuss when I speak with Don Barbone in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Meanwhile, coming up later, I'll speak with RJ Vita, a co-founder and CEO of the PEER Initiative, which aims to clean, maintain, and revive Tampa Bay's waters. With that objective in mind, in fact, this weekend, they're holding the December 14th cleanup, which, while somewhat self-descriptive, we'll ask RJ to fill us in on it and their mission overall, cleaning up the waters in and around Tampa Bay. How you can participate in this weekend's one or others in down the road. So that'll be when RJ joins us later in today's show. Right now, though, let's step into the world of rehabilitating injured and ill Florida wildlife, a particular skill of my guest today, Don Barbone, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ at WMNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Don Barbone to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Don.
Hey, Duncan, how are you today?
I'm very well. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you.
So I'm looking forward to learning more about Somity Wildlife, the work you do every day there, and hearing some stories of the many animals you've cared for. But partly so we have some context for that part of the story, I'd like to hear a bit of the Don Barbone story. After all, not everyone finds themselves spending their days caring for raccoons, possum, deers, and others. So let's trace that path a little bit, if we could. So I'm guessing, first of all, you're probably a longtime animal lover.
Yes, actually. Well, I am currently 52, and from the time I was a tiny little child, I always found myself in the company of animals and sitting quiet with them in a corner of a room and laying hands on them and trying to heal them and just figure out, you know, where the different organs were and the body parts and just trying to connect to that. And I just had that healing touch from the time I was a tiny child. I knew I was a healer and I knew this is what I had to do in life. This is my life's mission. And kind of a shame because a lot of people go through life and they don't realize what they're here for, what their mission is. I've known from the time I was a small child that I was here to serve God's beautiful creatures.
Wow. So I was going to ask you if at one point if you were one of those kids that's, you know, in and around the neighborhood tending to injured or ill animals. But I'm guessing from your answer you just gave that you're not only that, but you knew like, hey, I'm just going to keep doing this.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. That was definitely me as a child. And, you know, I just knew it was just a knowing why I was born, knowing, you know, what my mission was in life. And it is just a beautiful thing. It's not a day of work. It's the hardest work. And let me rephrase that. It's the hardest work ever because it's 24/7. It's around the clock. It's constant care for these animals, constant cleaning. There's needs, there's medications, there's regimens that have to be followed. And it's basically an emergency room for wildlife. Emergency rooms never shut down. So but yet it's not a day's work for me because it's literally just such a passion. It is my honor and my privilege to be able to care for these animals.
Well, that's really great, and it's so fantastic and rare, I think, to identify for someone to identify their mission when they're that young. When you were a little kid, and you said, "This is what I'm here to do, and this is what I will be doing," because I know this is kind of basically already identifying a calling as a little kid. Again, that itself is sort of rare. But did you ever question that, or did you ever compare notes with other kids who probably had, compared to you, little or no idea what they were meant to do?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I never really connected to humans very much, to be completely honest. I just, I never did quite understand why. It's like people just go through the motions in life. I feel like a lot more connected to, you know, just to animals and the environment and just the things, in my mind, that just really, really matter in life, like the finer things in life, the things that we should open our eyes to. And so, I don't know, I never really was on the same level as, you know, other kids or humans for that matter. It's just more of a, I don't know, an enlightened state, I guess, is what I want to say.
Yeah, but when you're young and you're going to school and you're meeting up with friends at or after school or sitting down with somebody at lunch, was there ever any kind of discussion of like, well, I know exactly what I'm doing? Because a lot of people say, well, at that point, I'm going to be a fireman, I'm going to be a nurse, I'm going to be a teacher.
Right.
But I'm sure not too commonly do people say, hey, I'm going to heal injured or ill animals and probably wildlife more specifically.
Absolutely. I mean, I always describe that as my passion and my mission. Whether or not I was going to be able to accomplish that was a different story because, you know, unfortunately, you have to, you know, earn a living however you possibly can. And this took me nearly 52 years to bring to into fruition, basically. Took me a very, very long time because I was a single mother and I had to, you know, raise my son and I had to work doing whatever I had to do to, you know, to make ends meet. And then later in life, even though I was healing animals and taking animals in and I'm not just talking, you know, dogs, cats, I'm talking about wildlife, you know, squirrels, raccoons and possums and just trying to help whatever I can. It didn't come until later in life when I said, you know what, I don't want to be under anybody else's license, which is what I was doing. I actually got injured pretty bad at work back in 2018. And at that point, I just decided I was going to pursue my own license. I knew I had the knowledge and the experience, so I did. And that allowed me the opportunity because I wasn't able to work. So I pursued that. And that's when Samadhi Wildlife started coming to light. So, yeah. It's something I always wanted to do. I just didn't know if I was going to be able to tackle it.
And did you feel during those years where you had other obligations, obviously raising a son in particular and just all the responsibilities that go with that, did you feel like your mission that you knew about when you were a little kid was slipping away, like, hey, how am I going to fulfill this under the circumstances?
Yes, absolutely, Duncan, for sure. I felt like, you know, it's like that feeling of, you know, you're not doing what you're supposed to do, but you're just going through the motions. And it's almost like it's like a feeling of being stuck and stagnant. And I hated that. I did not like that feeling at all. But again, you know, I had responsibilities. I had to do what I had to do.
Yeah. So you still were resolute in that feeling. You just said, okay, I can't get to it right now, but I am still every bit as committed to getting to it as soon as I can.
Definitely. Without a doubt. Absolutely.
And early on, either as a kid when you first kind of made this decision of this is going to be your lifelong sort of ambition and mission in life, and of course, curious to know how it may have evolved over the years, what do you think drew you so powerfully to animals? I mean, a lot of kids love animals. A lot of kids are that neighborhood kid that you know, again, tends to the injured or ill animal. But this sounds like a totally different situation in your case.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't talk about it a whole lot, but and a lot of people don't understand it, but I am an animal empath. And like I said, the connection is just much deeper. I understand them. They understand me. I feel like I can communicate to them or with them, excuse me. Ask me a question again. I got a little sidetracked there for a minute.
Yeah, no, I just was curious back when you were a kid and you first decided this was your mission and what drew you so powerfully to animals? Because it sounds like it was more than just the standard kids love animals kind of situation.
Yeah, that's actually such an easy question for me. It's because of the innocence of the animal. You know, even predators, you know, they are not, basically humans are so tainted and humans are so it seems like they're pulled in the wrong direction all the time. But animals, they're just trying to live and survive. And they're just, you know, if even predators are allowed to have everything that they need to survive without all of the fighting and all of the, you know, standing their ground and trying to survive, they are actually incredible creatures that are sentient beings. And it's, you know, people are so afraid of raccoons, and the raccoons that come in, especially as babies, of course, they are the most compassionate, loving, sweet creatures. And they just, they have needs, you know, they want love, they want to love, and they want to be loved. And it's just that innocence. It's not being tainted by the world and trying to keep up with other people. And that's what drew me in, is just the purity of it.
And it sounds like along the way, or fairly early on, it was wildlife that kind of spoke to you even more profoundly than just animals generally.
Yeah, they all did, for sure. But yeah, because I'm glad you mentioned that too. The reason I'm so passionate about wildlife is because as much as we all love cats and dogs and all the domesticated animals, there are so many resources, Duncan, for these animals. You know, there are so many shelters. There are so many pet stores. There are so many veterinarians that cater to, you know, domesticated animals. But if you think about it, there is just about nothing that caters to the medical needs of wild animals. And there's no resources for it. Somali Wildlife receives zero funding. We are 100% donation-based, and yet there's so many resources for dogs and cats and nothing for our wildlife. And it's a shame, because we are the ones that are actually killing their habitats by developing. Human encroachment is just literally wreaking havoc on our wildlife, and they have nowhere to turn. So for me to be able to provide wild animals with the medical care, the safety, the warmth, the individualized medical care and nutrition that they need, is just, that warms my heart on a level I can't even put into words.
So it's kind of early on identifying, here's a real need. I mean, I love all animals, and I would help them all given any opportunity. But dogs and cats, you know, already have a lot of resources and people that are going to step in and facilities that will help them.
Whereas, yeah, so many rescues, yes, absolutely.
So you just said, well, here's a niche I can fill that desperately needs to be filled.
Yeah, there's such a tremendous need in this day and age of, you know, habitat destruction from human encroachment. There needs to be a lot more of me.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. We talk about that a lot on this show, is development and construction and all kinds of things that are pushing, obviously, animals out of their habitat. And then you get encounters that people are upset about because they didn't look two steps prior to that to, like, how those animals are roaming around in their neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. Yes, exactly. And, you know, and it's just, it's so sad because people, they get aggravated when there's, you know, wildlife in their yard, and it's just, where are they supposed to go? We've left them with nothing. It's just terrible. The mass, you know, construction and just deforestation that's going on is just an absolute nightmare. There's so many displaced animals. It's a sin. It really is.
Yeah.
And that's what draws me again back to just animals and surrounding myself by them, because, you know, there's wonderful humans. I don't want to sound like a, you know, all humans are terrible. But in general, humans are driven by the almighty dollar, and they don't think about the repercussions of what it's doing to our habitat and our environment. And it's just all about, like I said, you know, making the money and you know, building more houses and developments and apartments. And it's just terrible. We're cutting down trees like we don't live in Florida. It's horrible. I mean, like, we need the shade and the oxygen and all that. You know,
all the things that trees provide, for sure.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, in case people might have just tuned in a little bit more recently, let me identify. This is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did just tune in a moment ago or so, My guest is Don Barbone, founder of Somedy Wildlife and nonprofit in Ormond Beach that rehabilitates sick, injured, and orphaned wildlife. Native to Florida, she's licensed through the state, so she receives all kinds of animals directly from the FWC, meaning critters arrive there that need help and care. It can include raccoons, rabbits, opossums, as well as deer, coyote, bobcats, and others. If you'd like to ask Don a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmf.org or text 813-433-0885. So tell me, in light of your obligations that you had and kind of things that prevented you from realizing this mission that you'd had, you know, since you were a kid, tell me about when you started to realize it and kind of the beginnings of Somedy, I guess.
When it started?
Yeah, how it sort of took hold once you were in a position to do something that you had wanted for years and years or decades and decades, arguably, to do. And you know, at some point there became an opportunity to do so. Yeah. But tell me the evolution to get there, because you don't just open a place like that out of the blue. There's obviously a lot of work probably elsewhere where you're learning the ropes and getting a handle on things.
Yep. Well, I you know, it started small, and I actually turned Somedy Wildlife into, I got my own license. I was rehabilitating other people's umbrellas under other licenses. Like I said, I got injured in 2018, so I decided to say, you know what, I felt like at that point, like I had more knowledge and experience than the people that were running these other places. So I said, I'm going to do this myself. So in 2018, I took that opportunity to get my own license because, like I said, I was actually injured from work. So I did that. And then I started really small at home. And I noticed within the first week of being state licensed, I was inundated. Florida Fish and Wildlife had dispatched so many calls to me, and then also random people finding wildlife that were calling in. It must have been 40-something animals in the first week, and I thought, this is huge. This is a massive, massive need, which I kind of already knew. So,
did you find it overwhelming at all, or did you find like, hey, this is exactly what I was hoping to get to for all those years?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I work really good under stress and emergency situations.
Thank God. Yeah, as it turns out.
At Somedy Wildlife, we don't just, rehab the orphaned, healthy little babies. We actually do the traumas in the area. So anything that is facing, you know, euthanasia, if somebody knows Somedy Wildlife, they will say, hey, listen, you know, I've got a raccoon with a arm hanging off, or, you know, a possum with its eye hanging out, or, you know, or whatever. Do you think you can help this animal because it's going to be euthanized? Or, you know, so, you know, we pride ourselves in doing those things too, because there's a huge need for, like I said, the medical care, the emergency needs. And the overwhelming part for me is not that. It's the fact that I know that there are so many more. And even though I'm serving a tremendous need for Central Florida and other parts of Florida, because I'm licensed to do the whole state, it's not enough. It's not enough. And I know that there's just so many animals out there that need help. And the fact of that as a whole, the crisis is so overwhelming to me. That's the part that overwhelms me, Duncan.
Just that there's so many that aren't arriving at your door that you know are out there that need this similar or even different kind of care?
Yes. I just want this to, you know, I just want it to blow up. I wish there was more, you know, resources for wildlife, more people wanting to step forward and learn how to rehabilitate these animals and help this with this need, especially, like I said, the number one thing is the habitat destruction.
So it sounds like from the day you opened the doors, I guess partly so you could open the doors, you were licensed by the state, I'm guessing. So if I have this right, by virtue of being licensed by the state, you're sent animals in need of care directly from the FWC, but you receive no funding from the FWC or the state otherwise. Is it just me, or does this seem like a little bit of a lopsided relationship? Like they bring the animals to care for you, yet they don't hand you a dime.
That's 100% true. Yeah, there's when you become a wildlife rehabber, it's known right from the beginning that you're getting into this on your own, you know, free will, and that it's something that's going to be your responsibility. So in that regard, they do make that abundantly clear. And that for me was just a little tiny hill to get over because I didn't care. You know,
it's not like they tricked you. I wasn't trying to suggest that. It just sounded like the very first day or week you were open, it sounded like there was 40 animals you know, pouring through the door. So it just seems like a lot from the get-go, and it seems like it's that pace has continued ever since.
Yeah, it's tough. There is literally there is no government funding. A lot of people think that, you know, we receive funding. And so, you know, when we receive animals, we actually have these intake forms. And at the bottom of the intake form, it states that if you would like to become a supporter, you know, because we don't receive any funding whatsoever. So, and that's how we have to do little fundraisers on social media, on Instagram, things like that. And, you know, otherwise we can't keep the doors open. So
it's strictly by donations that you're
100%. Yep.
Wow.
100% donation based. That is correct. And we have to buy everything. We have to buy the medications. We have to buy everything. So every dollar that is donated to us goes 100% to the animals. I don't take a dime for myself. None of our board members, nobody's paid the volunteers, nobody's paid. It all goes to the animals. And it has to be that way because there's, again, a tremendous need.
Yeah, it's probably hard to keep your head above water even with money's just going directly in that one specific purpose. So while we're at it, then let's just mention that the website for people who want to find out more and also see if they want to consider donating to help the cause. It's, let me just spell it out. It's SAMADHIWildlife.org. So that's the website to find out more about what we're talking about and maybe help them with their, it seems like, relentless efforts to help animals. So
yeah, that would be wonderful.
So what animal do you treat most frequently and for what condition?
Raccoons and, you know, all different things. But I'm going to tell you that this week it has been distemper every day coming in, these poor raccoons. That's this week at a glance. So, but mostly it's just, you know, dehydration, you know, basically like, you know, animals that are just struggling out there. They've, again, you know, losing their habitat. So they're having to compete for food, water sources, all sorts of things. And so they're coming in like just sick and dehydrated, emaciated, things like that. So that's the thing I do most, I would say, is just, you know, give supportive care, you know, subcutaneous fluids, intravenous fluids, you know, antibiotics, vitamin injections, things like that. So that's the thing we do most. That's just every day, all day long.
Yeah. Sounds like raccoons, common, probably some other, you know, rabbits, et cetera, possum maybe. Yeah. But how do you adapt the medical area and yourselves, like you and your colleagues and other volunteers, et cetera, when treating a, let's say, more risky animal like a coyote or a bobcat?
So we have to sedate and then work on them. So, and the same thing with the, you know, the raccoons and possums and, you know, sometimes they can be handled, but, you know, sometimes they're, you know, when they come in young, it's easier to deal with, but we get the traumas, like I said, too. So when you're getting a, say, full-grown raccoon that is, you know, injured severely, there is just no way that you're going to be able to work on that animal. So we have to sedate them. But, you know, whether it's, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, really. You know, a coyote, a fox, bobcat, raccoon, usually we're sedating.
And does that, in any situation, depending on what their initial condition was to begin with, have any impact on their chances for recovery, like by being sedated?
Absolutely. And that's, man, you're good at this, Duncan.
well, thank you.
100%, yes. We have to take a risk. So my husband and I, Jesse, we basically will tag team, things like that. So if there's an animal that's really, really struggling and I suspect that there's, like, you know, organ damage or organs are starting to fail or something like that, the last thing in the world I want to do is, you know, sedate them, you know, heavy-duty sedatives. So we will try to then, you know, tackle it as best we can with, you know, he'll gear up with, you know, all sorts of, you know, protective gear on, and we'll just have to basically, like, tackle the animal and try to, you know, work on it as best we can that way. But it's always best to sedate if we can, because it's less stressful for the animal too.
But it sounds like in those situations where medically it is too risky, that everybody just sort of goes into a sort of battle mode and gets all their protective gear on, and you just sort of muddle through without that animal being sedated and just hope for the best.
Correct. And, yeah, none of our volunteers do that. It's just myself and, like I said, my husband, Jesse. we do that. We don't put anybody else at risk. So,
and what conditions typically bring a coyote or, let's say, a bobcat in for care of one kind or another?
Hit by car, broken legs, things like that. Yeah, that's mostly what we're seeing there. The last coyote that I had, he had his left front leg was just snapped completely in half. And the last bobcat that I had in, the same thing. Its back leg was snapped right in half. Up.
And this is by being hit by a car?
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes it's attacks, too. But generally, you know, like the smaller animals that'll come in, like the possums or the raccoons or something like that, if something gets a hold of them, like a dog or something like that, it'll shake them around and then they'll break their bones that way. But like these bigger animals and stuff, and, you know, all of them really are just, again, there's a lot of humans and a lot of cars. So we're seeing a lot of hit by car.
And again, that goes back to our earlier part of the conversation with their habitats being encroached on, so they're closer to roads and highways and cars than they would be or should be.
You know, there's something I want to touch on, too, that, you know, a lot of people, there's such a misconception that raccoons have brought so much disease and, you know, there's rabies and distemper and all these different things. And, you know, it is, you know, and I've done so much research, and that's actually a misconception. It's actually domesticated animals that have actually introduced these things to our wildlife. You know, distemper is not, raccoons did not bring that to the table. So, and the reason that raccoons are suffering so much from distemper is because, and I know I sound like a broken record, but it's because of the encroachment. They are having to live in much more condensed areas. So when something like distemper presents itself, it is a virus, and it is very contagious when it's in its active stage. So they spread it amongst each other like wildfire because they're living in very condensed areas, whereas before all of this major development and there was ample woods and forests, they were spread out more, and it wasn't hitting as hard. So that's what's going on with raccoons and distemper. It's sad. They have a bad rap, rabies and distemper and all this, but that is why this is happening. And it needs to be, you know, there needs to be an understanding of that. Like, people need to realize that we are doing this. We are creating these crises.
Wow, and it sounds like it's not gonna be any sort of easing up on it, just because the encroachment and the development and all the stuff that we talked about is just going to continue apace.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, not getting any better.
So where did you learn to tend to, let's say, a coyote with a broken leg or an otherwise injured bobcat? I mean, and the other wildlife that you treat, for that matter, did you undergo some special training, or did you kind of teach yourself along the way, or how did this come to be?
I get that question a lot, and I've always had a knack for just the understanding of the body and the organs and the function. But I'm self-taught, and I've spent a lot of times, you know, with my own pets, you know, at the veterinarian's office and just picking their brains and just, you know, having conversations with them where they're like, wow, you know, you really know your stuff. And then, you know, so from there, I would just, you know, like I said, I would pick their brains, ask different questions, and then I would do my own research, and then just hands-on. Just, you know, I have the confidence in myself that I can do this, and, you know, I have a general, you know, pretty good understanding of where these bones are supposed to line up. And, you know, and I do, you know, a lot of, there's, you know, when it comes to broken bones, there's closed reductions, there's open reductions and things like that, where that's how, you know, how you place the bones back together. And, you know, of course, the closed reductions is when you don't have to make an incision in the leg to, you know, put the bones back together. And they just kind of, you know, you just learn. It's just hands on, and I can feel the bones going back into place, and then I splint them. And, you know, sometimes there's really, really compound, you know, things that I can't do, but, yeah, it's just self-taught, just a lot of research and understanding and compassion, and really honestly communicating with the animal and understanding what they need is the biggest thing. It's all driven by spirit. I work from my spirit.
It's back to being the empath.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right.
But it also sounds like it's, you know, a byproduct of the lifelong sort of mission. Like, this is what I'm meant to do, because it sounds like you have like a real innate gift for healing these animals. And occasionally, if it's too complicated or you get into a situation where you thought, hey, I can help this animal heal too, and then it's more complicated, do you have access to like a wildlife vet that can take over and help you in that situation?
Yes. In order to be state licensed wildlife rehabber, you have to have the backing of a veterinarian so that you can sound things off of them and also get supplies and things like that. So I don't rely on them very often, but I do have the blessing of calling one to, you know, ask some questions. Hey, you know, I was thinking this or that for a treatment. What do you think? You know, and stuff like that. So absolutely.
Okay. Again, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Truss. My guest is Don Barbone, founder of Somity Wildlife, a nonprofit in Ormond Beach to rehabilitate sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, especially that's native to Florida, aiming to return those animals to their habitat when they're well. You're invited to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So along those lines, we have an email that came in that I thought I'd read to you. Don says, unfortunately, the FWC trap rule changes will do nothing to help reduce the rehabilitators' burdens and will likely increase their burdens. They need to engage more in that rulemaking. If we want FWC reform, we need to vote accordingly next year, starting with David Jolly for governor. He's the only one committed to reforming the FWC commission board, the only one who has spoken out against the bear hunt. So... That's interesting. And while we're on, I guess since you're sort of teamed in some ways with the FWC, I guess it's almost imperative that I ask you about your feelings about the bear hunt.
Oh, I think it's absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible. Who are we to just go and open fire on these animals? I mean, it would be like, you know, honestly, it would be like somebody just opening fire on us and just deciding, hey, you know, I'm going to take you out today. I just think it's a horrible, I just think it's a crying shame. I really do. It breaks my heart. I actually don't like talking about it because it brings me to tears. I think it's terrible, and I think they need to stop it. And I think people who are passionate about the same way I feel need to step forward and fight for these bears.
Well, there's certainly a lot of people that have been doing that, but I just found it sort of, it's probably a super tricky position for you to be in since you're in some ways teamed with the FWC, and yet this was kind of really an FWC decision that largely ignored the public will, it seemed like. So
yeah, I know. You know, and regardless of the fact that I am, you know, licensed through Florida Fish and Wildlife, I have a lot of beef with them. Clearly, I respect them, and I have to follow their rules, which I do very well. But I doesn't mean I agree with the things that they come up with, because there are a lot of things that I disagree with, and there's nothing I can do about it. Because again, the bigger picture is I need to be here for the animals, so I have to just muddle my way through, you know, their bureaucracy, I guess you want to call it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't want to get you more upset, so we'll move on from there. But I couldn't not ask about the bear hunt, just generally, and especially since you have an association, obviously, with the FWC, it just seems even more essential. But let's go back to Somity, which I think I keep mispronouncing. So
It's Somity.
Somity. So it's the middle.
There you go.
It's the middle syllable. That's the emphasized one. Somity. Okay.
Somity.
So was your plan always to call your place Somity?
No, actually, that was thanks to my husband, Jesse. At one point, I was thinking about calling it Healing Hands. And then, you know, I was like, I don't know. That's so generic, and there's probably other ones. And Jesse is also a very spiritual person as well. And he's very into just like yoga and his body and breathing and just connecting to the spirit. And he actually brought to my awareness that the state of Somati is basically the level of meditation when you're actually the highest level of meditation when you're one with God. And when he said that, hey, we should call it Somati Wildlife, I was fully on board, because that is when I feel closest to God, when I'm healing the animals, when he's working through me, through my hands. So it was unbelievable. It was a win-win. Jesse also created our logo, and in the middle of the logo, it's a heart, and it says love.
Yeah.
So that we are driven, we work from our spirit and from love, a place of love.
For sure. And that, again, this kind of circles back to your being an empath as well, it seems like, because it sounds like you enter sort of a particular state when you're caring for an injured or ill animal, right?
Definitely. There's there were many a times that, you know, like, for example, the last coyote I spoke of that had his arm was broken clear in half. He's a completely wild animal, you know, and I just literally sat at one end of his enclosure and he was at the other. And little by little throughout the day, I would just inch a little bit closer and a little bit closer and just literally connect to him and just sending him love. Just love from literally from my brain to his. And before you know, before the end of the day, I was literally just laying head to head with him and just pouring love into him, you know, and compassion. I understand you. I feel you. I'm here for you. I want to help you. And so, yes, everything is definitely from a place of love and just enlightenment, just working from the spirit.
Just sounds like, once again, a really profound connection, which is pivotal, I'm sure, to the healing that's going on there.
Yes, definitely. People that come through here are just literally blown away because it's just a different level that Jesse and I work out of. And our volunteers are absolutely incredible people. And we are just blessed to have the team that we have.
And are there certain animals that are not easier to treat, but that you kind of relish working with just because of how you feel about that particular species of animal? Or is just whatever the next patient is, I'm up for it.
Oh yeah, pretty much. In fact, Somali Wildlife, we only rehabilitate Florida native mammals. So we don't do birds, we don't do reptiles. However, oddly enough, literally minutes before your call, Jesse had handed me a little box turtle that had this mass on its eye, a really really bad infection, and I just kind of went at it and just worked on his eye and. Basically, you know, I'm in the process of healing his eye, and that's not something we normally would work on, but I have full confidence in, again, that just that love and that connection that, you know, bring me a bird, bring me a reptile. We can do it here. We can do that. But again, we don't really advertise that because we want to stick with the mammals, but yes, you know.
So in an emergency, you can move beyond kind of what you're technically licensed to. The animals
Definitely.
You're technically licensed to care for.
Yep. And you know, and I can do reptiles and birds if I choose to. I focus on mammals. So, but the license does cover all of that.
I gotcha. So, what role does education play in the Somati operation?
Oh, huge. Because again, what we're doing here is so completely different than a lot of the rehab centers that are just, you know, and we need them. We absolutely need them. I don't downplay them at all. You know, where they're bringing in, you know, like the orphan babies and things like that. And just like the basic cases, you know, that, you know, you're, you know, making formula, feeding babies, you know, just doing basic care and stuff like that. We do that. And then so much more. And man, I tell you what, Duncan, you really, really, really got to know when you're dosing these animals with medication and what to give and what medication not to mix with another and what species can, you know, take this antibiotic but not this one. And so there is a lot of knowledge and experience that plays here, a lot.
Yeah. And I was also kind of thinking about education more broadly to the public about kind of the work that you do and the animal's plight and that kind of thing. Because I know you have those ambassadors on hand that I assume are partly at least for that kind of purpose.
The ambassadors?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, they're definitely, their main purpose is educational outreach.
Right. That's what I guess I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. Educational outreach. Yeah. Just understanding the animals better. You know, we've got, we have an ambassador deer, a white-tailed deer. She's 6 years old. She has some pulmonary fibrosis in her lungs from long-term pneumonia that she had when she was a fawn. We have Judja, which has, she is a victim of cerebellar hypoplasia, which is from an animal mother that had distemper. Then, you know, it passes through the babies. And it becomes cerebellar hypoplasia. It's just a nervous system issue. And then there's also, she's the one that's in the wheelchair. And then there's also our newest ambassador is Precious the raccoon. She's just a baby, and she also has cerebellar hypoplasia.
And I take it you never shake that condition once you contract it?
No, definitely. Yeah. No. It's a lifelong struggle for them.
So will that baby that just came in eventually become less and less mobile and go the wheelchair route like JoJo?
Actually, she has gotten more. She's gotten more mobile because I do therapy on them too.
Oh, great!
And, so she was very locked up when she first came in. She had abscesses in all of her joints. She was in terrible condition. And JoJo is actually very mobile. She just can't stay upright. Her balance just makes her go right over. But when I put her in a wheelchair, all of her legs work like a normal raccoon, and she just takes off.
Wow.
So, so Precious the raccoon, she's too small for a wheelchair, but I definitely am going to get her in one as soon as she's bigger. And then the other ambassador that we have is Beans the possum, Mr. Beans. And he came in as a baby, and he had, lacerations all over him, and his left eye was hanging completely out. The optic nerve was still attached, but it was hanging completely out. So his vision's not the greatest. I was able to save the eye. The eye is viable. It's alive, but he doesn't see well out of it. So we have some ambassadors. They're wonderful, resources for people who want to learn more about the animal and have a better understanding.
Great. Well, we have just about a minute left here together, Don. So I think a lot of well-meaning people would probably appreciate guidance on what to do and maybe more to the point what not to do when they see an injured bunny or what appears to be an injured bunny or a baby squirrel that's by itself. So I think a lot of people, their instinct is to help out and bring that to the place like yours or do something with it. And sometimes that's not always the best course of action. So maybe you could just briefly address that. We're almost out of time.
Yeah. The best thing to do, finding a orphaned, injured, sick wild animal is to not do anything. Just scoop the animal up, bring it to safety, keep it warm and in a dark, quiet place, and don't give anything by mouth, and call a rehabber immediately. The warmth is the key.
Okay, great. Well, that sounds simple enough. I think so many of us, at least including myself, have, with all the best intentions, done the wrong thing sometimes. So it's a hard lesson to learn, but it's valuable.
Yeah. So, a lot of people want to feed them or give them something by mouth, but don't do anything and call a rehabber ASAP.
Yeah, that's the key thing. Call the rehabber. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Don. Well, this has been Don Barbone from Samadhi Wildlife. Again, it's Samadhi Wildlife.org for the website to learn more about what we discussed. And again, if you want to support their efforts or do anything more, maybe volunteer, depending on where you are, geographically or whatever, that's the place to go. So, Don, thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. I appreciate speaking with you and learning all about the Samadhi wildlife and eventually learning how to pronounce it correctly.
Thank you so much, Duncan. You've been wonderful. I appreciate you. And thank you for your interest.
Thanks a lot. Good luck. Thank you. In a moment, I'll speak with RJ Vita of the Pure Initiative, which is dedicated to cleaning and reviving Tampa Bay's waters. Not coincidentally, he's holding a cleanup in and around those waters this Sunday, December 14th. So if you'd like to participate in the cleanup or otherwise hear more, we'll do that momentarily when RJ joins us on WMNF here on Talking Animals. Right now, though, we're going to step into the comedy corner with part of a piece selected with our discussion of Florida wildlife in mind. Here's Possum Problem, Sebastian Maniscalco, today's comedy corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
God, is it nice to be here. I'm dealing with a possum problem at the house. Just moved into a new house. Me and my wife like to go in the yard at night, have a little wine, and these possums are comfortable. Like if they could talk, they'd be like, "What the hell are you doing here?" Now, growing up, I grew up in an immigrant family, and how we handled possums, raccoons, my father would be like, "We're going to murder the bastard. We're going to pour antifreeze on bologna."
What?
Woke up in the morning, birds, squirrels, raccoons just murdered all over our property. Neighbors coming by, "Have you seen our cat?" "Nah, we haven't seen it. Check the yard." But my wife, she didn't grow up this way. We got to call the possum police. It's a humane service. They come over, $150 traps. Guy tells me it's $35 extra for the bait. I said, "What are you using?" He's like, "Peanut butter."
$35 for peanut butter? I got $1.23 Jiffy inside. What kind of... Danny tells me it's $75 per possum that he removes. I thought, where are you taking the possums? He's like, I drive them 30 miles away. I let them go in Malibu. Now, I don't believe a word this guy's telling me. I think he goes down the block, lets it out. He's making $75 on the same possum.
All right, that was Sebastian Maniscalco in today's Comedy Corner with part of a piece called Possum Problem, taken from an appearance on Conan. Now it's time to talk with RJ Vita of the Pure Initiative about their efforts to clean and revive Tampa Bay's waters, including a major undertaking happening this Sunday, December 14th. Let's hear more right now by welcoming RJ Vita to Talking Animals on WMF. Good morning, RJ.
Good morning, Duncan. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. I know you're swamped. I appreciate you making the time.
Absolutely.
So let's start by asking you maybe to provide an overview of Pure Initiative, the history, the mission, and so on.
Absolutely, yeah. So I'm a business owner here in Tampa, and Tampa has been very, very good to me. So it's been important for me to find a way to give back to Tampa. And during COVID, when I was out running, because that's kind of what we all did, you know, trying to get outside and when we're jailed in our homes, I was running the Riverwalk, and I was pretty disgusted on the amount of garbage that I saw that was kind of caught along the banks there. And, you know, running an event company, there weren't a whole lot of events going on during that time. So it wasn't, you know, it made sense at that time. I'm going to try a new endeavor. Let's start this nonprofit Pure Initiative and try to put a dent in the pollution problem we have in our waterways. And that's kind of where it all began. And it's been very organic since then. But one of the most important things that we do is our consistency of doing a cleanup every single month, the second Sunday, for the last, you know, 5 or so years. And it's been amazing. We've pulled, you know, tens of thousands of pounds of trash from our waterways. It's been quite the adventure, and absolutely it's become a passion of mine for sure.
Well, that's great. How many people typically turn up to the monthly cleanup?
So we have on average between 40 to 50 people.
A lot of
students. Oh, it's fantastic. And the students are awesome. It's great seeing the youngsters getting out there, especially when they come with their families, because our biggest thing is to kind of change the mindset of people. You know, when you're out walking around, you see trash on the ground, don't ignore it. You know, pick it up, throw it away. We're trying to make picking up trash cool. You'll see my logo. It's kind of catchy. It's me with a backwards hat on, you know, picking up a bottle of trash to throw it away. You know, I came from New Jersey, which is, you know, the Garden State, and most of it is quite beautiful. But there is a bit of an issue with the trash that I kind of grew up around, where people will throw something out of their car and kind of just ignore it, and that was okay. And we don't want that to be that way. So starting the children young at a young age, you know, that when you see something out, pick it up, throw it away, get it in a trash can so it doesn't end up in our waterways.
That sounds great. Now, when there's these 40 or 50 folks, are they participating in different ways, like by land and by sea, in other words, kind of? Or how does everybody kind of go about their own cleanup efforts in the overall?
Oh, for sure. So it really depends on the location. Our most popular location is the Davis Island boat ramp right there, just because it's very accessible for everyone. We do bring some kayaks with us, and there are some areas along the rocks right along the airport there, which actually collects a lot of the trash. In fact, we can be there, you know, there might be a cleanup on, say, a Saturday, and we're there the very next day on a Sunday, and we'll still pull trash from that same spot. It works almost like the net that you have, you know, when you're skimming your pool. It kind of grabs that trash, and it gives us an opportunity to grab it. So that's our water aspect. That's kind of where we'll get trash from the water side. But most of the folks, honestly, are just picking up trash along the shoreline.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're averaging about 300 pounds of trash every cleanup, even at that location. So
wow.
It's pretty remarkable.
That is remarkable. And then what happens once that's all been collected for that day's cleanup? Where does it go? How do you guys dispose, for lack of a better
Absolutely.
Term, of it yourself?
The most important thing is to get it where it needs to be. You know, get it in a trash can, get it in a dumpster. We've actually worked with the city now. They've been absolutely fantastic. The park guys are incredible. They don't get enough credit. You know, there's typically one guy managing all of these parks and going around picking up trash. So we work with them to get them in trash bags, get them in a place where they can take them and properly dispose of them so they don't end up right back on our waterways.
And how long do these cleanup days typically last, RJ? Is it all day? Is it several hours? Or how do you typically run it?
That's the best thing about it. When you have 40 to 50 people, you can make an impact in a very short amount of time. So we're not stealing your Sunday away from you, right? So you still have your entire Sunday ahead of you. You can go out, go to brunch, or do whatever you like to do on a Sunday, relax. It's only about an hour for the cleanup itself. And then we come back to our meeting point and we do a weigh-in. That's my favorite part. We do a weigh-in of all the trash, see how much that we've got for the day. We tally it up, and then we give away a ton of free swag because it's the least thing I can do is to kind of give back to the volunteers that are there bright and early on a Sunday.
That's great. So what time does the cleanup itself start? It sounds like it's not much of the day, like you say.
Yeah.
Which is great. But what time does it typically start?
So it starts every time at 8 o'clock in the morning. It takes us a few minutes to kind of go over what we're doing. We provide everything for you. So your trash pickers, your bags, your gloves. All you need to do is show up with some sneakers, some clothes that you're willing to get a little dirty, and honestly, a positive attitude.
Well, that sounds great. And again, so the one this Sunday, the 14th, is also at Davis Island, which you mentioned is kind of a frequent location. So
absolutely.
Yes, people. So if people are hearing this, say, hey, I got an hour or so to devote to that, do they just turn up, or do they sign up in some way, or what's the best way?
Yeah, we have to keep track of everyone that's coming just to make sure we have enough gloves and everything. Obviously, we plan for the most. But if you go to our website, pureinitiative.org, you can go on there and you can RSVP for our actual cleanups. And that kind of gives us an idea, because we typically will also bring some donuts, we'll have some drinks and that kind of stuff. So we want to make sure we have enough for everyone. There have been times where, you know, we'll plan for 40 and 100 show up, which is the least of my worries. It's wonderful when that happens.
The proverbial good problem to have.
Exactly.
That's great. Well, this sounds really, really cool. And sounds like everybody can feel good about that hour or two of what they're doing. And
absolutely. It starts your Sunday in a great way.
Yeah, I feel like you're really making a difference. By 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, you've already rocked hard, which is great.
Exactly. Yeah, you start your day off on the right foot, as I like to say it.
That's very cool. All right, so that's this Sunday, December 14th, at the Davis Island Boat Ramp. But again, go to pureinitiative.org first if you're interested in participating in RSV and let them know you're coming. So make sure you get a donut out of the deal at least. And
for sure.
And RJ, thanks. This sounds like a great idea and a very cool thing. And sounds like it's been a nice ongoing project and it's making some serious progress for the Tampa Bay waters.
Absolutely.
All right, well, thanks and good luck. We'll see you on Sunday, hopefully.
Be good, sir. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks. Coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Myra Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, it's The Scoop, WNF's brief news recap. Then we shift back to music programming with Sam Wall, holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C. hosting a traffic jam from 3 to 6 p.m. And after that, it's all just more great music of all different kinds here on 88.5 WNF. Meanwhile, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. Next Wednesday, December 17th, we'll bring the annual Talking Animals Holiday Animal Song Special. Say that three times fast or even once slow. We've done this for a dozen years, probably more actually. It involves playing holiday tunes, but only if they're also animal songs and keeping with the longtime ethos of the show. And that particular program also features the traditional reading of what I've called the Dorothy Strauss Christmas Message. So I invite you to tune in for that next Wednesday, December 17th here at 8:85 at 11 a.m. Also invite you to make a year-end donation at WNF.org. We're in our final parts of the year, and I'm sure we lost our federal and state funding, so we're trying to make up some deficits. So if you want to go to WNF.org, any gift of any size will be much appreciated. So thanks for considering doing that. And we'll be back next Wednesday on Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. Thanks so much. Stay tuned for The Conversation and all the other great programs coming up after that here on WNF Tampa.